Hey, what's up? This is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 66 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And in this episode, I am lucky enough to talk to Miguel Vidal from Valentina's Tex-Mex Barbecue. If you haven't visited after this, you're going to want to go for sure. You'll want to fly out if you're not even in town. It's really special what he and Modesty have put together. And this one is really great because I knew he must have been passionate about what he does, and I had heard from people, but listening to him, you could see his passion. You could hear how thoughtful he is in putting everything together and what his concept was and what he wanted to attain and what he wanted to give customers. I'm not going to go too deeply into it because he goes really deeply into it. We go into his history, go into his past with playing soccer and then making briskets to kind of combat his dad who was making briskets. It's some really great special stories. I know you're going to love it. Thank you, Miguel, for sharing this. If you're liking these, please subscribe. That way you can get all the back episodes. I have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. I also have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com. But enjoy this. Good morning, Miguel. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Good morning. So just want to know, I want to give people a glimpse into your background, your history for Modesty and yourself and Elias, and then also kind of a glimpse into how you created what you created, because I think it's extremely unique. It's probably not unique to you because it's probably within your soul, but it's unique to a lot of people. And I know that whenever anybody comes to Austin, I always recommend that they go visit you because you guys are doing something really special.
Right. Well, I appreciate that. Well, you know, I'm from San Antonio.
Okay.
I was born and raised in San Antonio. I grew up on the South Side, and which was really predominantly Mexican American and very Chicano is what I like to say.
Okay.
I played sports my whole life, but food was always like the center of our family get-togethers or gathering. And growing up, I didn't ever really know what it was like or experience like going out to eat.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Everything was cooked at home. Like the best food that I was eating was the home cooked meals that my parents were making. Mm-hmm. And whenever we went out to eat, you know, I could remember as a young kid, like stuff like Olive Garden or Outback House was like going out, you know?
Yeah.
Even though we didn't think that that was like the best meal, it was what was affordable to us. Mm-hmm. And that's where we would go out to eat. And there was a couple of places in San Antonio that were kind of special to our family growing up, like the Little Red Barn.
Well, I've heard of that.
And they basically do like, you know, T-bone steak and French fries, you know.
That was special though, right?
That was a night out, you know. But growing up, I remember a lot of every get-together, or if there was a quinceañera or birthday party or just kind of a weekend where the family got together, Easter or whatnot, from the, you know, earliest years I can remember, it was about kind of like this Texas-American Tejano kind of Mexican fusion always that was around my family, where my dad and uncles or grandfather would always be barbecuing in the backyard. And my mom and aunts grandmother would make the sides, basically. And that had to do with Mexican rice, chato beans, and, you know, potato salad. And, you know, growing up in Texas, like, who doesn't love barbecue, you know?
Yeah.
And there wasn't, like, this super craze right now where everyone's trying to one-up everybody.
For sure.
I guess as far as, like, in the mainstream or just – you know, the way it is now with, you know, so much emphasis on craft barbecue. And, you know, I mean, there's always a sense of Texas having the best barbecue. I can remember that as a kid. And even within our family, between my dad's cousins and uncles and whatnot, they're always competing against each other to see who had the best food. You know?
Were they cooking ribs and brisket and things or carne asada?
Well, no, it was like a lot of chicken, a lot of like half chickens, whole chickens, ribs, a lot of skirts, like asadas or skirt steak.
Yeah.
Brisket was always part of our deal, though.
That's amazing. Because in California, I guess maybe it's a Texas thing, because a lot of the Hispanic families, I don't know if they're all cooking brisket, but they're all cooking ribs and chicken and things like that.
Right. Like ribs and chicken are, you know, it's cheap,
yeah.
You know. If I can remember staples as a kid, it would be chicken thighs, quartered chicken, country style pork ribs, baby backs when they went into splurge a little bit, and brisket, because a brisket at the time was super cheap. You know, they're paying like $1.80 a pound or something, or maybe even cheaper than that. And it's something that could feed a lot of people.
That's so true.
And the way that we would eat it is with homemade tortillas, some avocado, and fresh salsa that was made in a molcajete, you know?
Oh, that sounds so good right now.
And I have my earliest memories of eating barbecue like that was with my family from the, age of like 5, 6.
So you've been eating it your whole life, essentially.
Been eating it my whole life, and that was like the technique in creating something that's really aesthetically pleasing wasn't necessarily the main idea. It was about creating something that tasted good. So when I remember brisket as a young kid, I remember it kind of maybe being like, some slice and a lot of like fatty on it because it wasn't being trimmed. It was being smoked for hours and then cut up or
And they
shredded
probably
up.
cut straight up, right? Was it?
Right. There wasn't no resting periods, like as part as like the whole science behind it,
True, yeah.
But as I got older and before there was the barbecue craze and I was maybe into, going into college or late high school, I mean, cooking has always been a part of what we do. It's just the center of our family in general. And it's the time for us to, create something that we put our heart into and share it and have a good time with each other.
And kind of slow down a bit, maybe too, and enjoy life.
Want to put the best effort into the food because that's your family time and everything is about that. And there's nothing like having great food with your family.
Without a doubt.
And there's like influences. Like my dad's aunt had a place called Dona Maria's. My dad's aunt and uncle. And I remember eating that place from, 4, 5, 6 years old. I may not remember it all, but there's glimpses of it and there's smells and stuff that, trigger memories.
That was in
And
San Antonio.
that was in San Antonio, and it was off Culebra Street, right around the area of like where Little Flower Church is. So my grandmother and then they lived off like Culebra and like 22nd Street over on the west side of San Antonio. Dona Maria's was right off Culebra, and it was like puffy tacos, breakfast all day long, guisada, chalupas and enchiladas and tripas and stuff like that, tamales on the one, and barbacoa every Sunday, and menudo, kind of typical, in my opinion, Tex-Mex food, which now has evolved into something that's like kind of very commercial,
Yeah, and like they elevated in a strange way.
it's elevated in a strange way, and there's like always this conception, well, that's not Mexican, well, Tex-Mex has cheese all over everything or beef. Well, yeah, it's kind of become kind of, very like, just plain.
Commercialized, you're right. It is.
So, these memories of these home cooked meals and barbecuing and whatnot have always, been a part of us. And when I moved up to Austin, I really couldn't find food that hit me the same way.
That makes sense.
This was in 1999 when I moved up.
Okay.
I got a scholarship and I played soccer at St. Edward's University. So, prior to that, talking a little bit about my background is I worked in restaurants since I was 15 years old. I would take a bus from the south side of San Antonio to downtown on Dolorosa Street, and I worked my first restaurant as a dishwasher at a friend of mine I played soccer with. His uncle owned the Bambino's Pizza.
Okay.
He now has a he still has a restaurant now, but it's in Cibolo, and it might be Cibolo Pizzeria or something. I don't know the name, but this gentleman that I worked for my first job, he's had a restaurant his whole life, and he's changed names a couple of times, and it's kind of like a New York style type pizzeria place. So my first job was at that restaurant, washing dishes, moved up to making salads and then making the dough and sauce and pasta. And then I was kind of one of the kids that helped run the place, That was my high school job and always been in the service industry since then.
Great experience at the beginning, yeah.
It was great, And, I was cooking at a fairly young age and going home and trying to, I remember one at 16, 17, like my mom's having a little. Same thing, we're having a party, there's barbecue, there's rice and beans, and so I added the pasta salad to the menu because I was working at the Italian restaurant. And those are the influences I think that are really great about this Mexican American culture is where, you know, I'm like fourth generation, you know, Texan, fifth generation now, fourth generation. Either ways, these influences, you know, there's like a period of time I feel where like being a Mexican American, you were taught to be American first before Mexican.
I could see that.
And there's like this time where like the assimilation process was more about like, hey, be American, go to college, get your education. And, you know, my dad was in the Marine Corps, my grandfather was in the Army, and there's like the real strong, you know, American type pride. There's a real strong American pride and Texan pride. And that kind of like superseded the Mexican heritage, but not really. You know what I mean? My dad and my grandparents were proud to be American. And so,
But the heritage was always in the background, but it wasn't the forefront.
right, not necessarily at the forefront all the time, but it was always in the background. My grandparents still spoke Spanish. My dad spoke Spanish. I learned Spanish on my own. It wasn't necessarily spoken at home all the time, but I grew up on the south side of San Antonio, so half the kids are speaking kind of Spanglish and stuff, and that's how I grew up. So anyway, this, you know,
So at that point, when you were working at the Italian restaurant, were you thinking, you know, someday it would be fun to have a restaurant, or is that was that even in your
it was always
vision?
an idea of mine as a young kid to own my own business
Yeah.
and be and I always had fun cooking or doing that stuff. I always enjoyed being able the idea of creating something and other people enjoying it, you know.
That's a great feeling.
And when I was in high school, we moved to I guess North Central San Antonio, around Blanco, Jackson Keller area. I graduated from Robert E. Lee High School. We moved, and a lot of my friends I grew up playing club soccer with went to Lee. And so it was a really nice, really time in my life where we had a really great soccer team. It was the only sports team there during the time that was worth anything, and we were like winning games. So
That's awesome.
we were like the cool kids there. So after there was a period, I guess my junior and senior year, where after every game we won, we had this one kid's house where his mom was cool with us going over after the games, and we would grill or barbecue. So where there's a bunch of 16 to 18 year olds, and I was always on the barbecue pit and grill, you know, doing skirt steak for fajitas and half chickens and ribs, and we're cooking, hanging out, drinking beers, celebrating victory.
Nice.
And there I was cooking, you know. It's kind of you know, very little did I know I was gonna end up doing
No,
that.
I know. That's so funny. Yeah.
So that kind of stuff was there. You know, I go to college, and you know, I experienced a lot of things during college. My first initial dream was to become, I wanted to play professional soccer. And you know, it's a hard thing to do here in America, especially what, like 15, 18 years ago.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there was no money in it, and if you want anything, you have to go abroad or whatever. So, you know, I had my little stint at it. I got injured in college, and I recovered, and I ended up playing like a semi-pro for a couple years and
Oh.
gave it a shot. And but I didn't give it 100% effort like I have in the barbecue. I thought I was, but there was other aspects of my life that, you know, I let other things get in the way during that time, and I thought I was 100% in, but I really wasn't,
Yeah,
you
when you
know.
look back on stuff too, you're like, yeah, I wasn't
Yeah, no way.
so
And
lucky.
if I would have put the same effort at 18 into that as I did at 32 years old into this business, who knows what might have happened,
True,
you know.
yeah, without a doubt.
But so I ended up moving to Miami, and when I go to Miami for a year, I had to get out of Austin. I'm training there and I'm playing soccer, but I'm also working at, you know, I worked at Cheesecake Factory, and I worked at a place called Fish 54. At Fish 54, I made friends with the kitchen. I was waiting tables because that was where the money was at. But I spent time in the kitchen and made friends with the chefs and the kids who were working at Johnson and Wales at the time. I mean, they were going to school at Johnson and Wales, and they were working in the kitchen. And I just started learning. I started just, you know, I would shuck oysters if they needed oysters shucked, and I would learn what a beurre blanc was and how to do that
Oh,
stuff.
that's so cool.
So it was kind of like this unofficial kind of stodging that I was doing for free, you know. So on my days off or my extra time, I was hanging out in the kitchen and just picking up different techniques and learning how they were making the food, which in turn I was seeing it was making me a better salesman, and I was selling that food.
Sure.
I knew all the techniques and I was practicing them, and I started to fall in love with food when I was in Miami.
Okay.
I had a restaurant job here in Austin at Ranch 616 before I went to Miami, but I wasn't in all the way, you know. I was good at it and stuff, but it was in Miami is probably when I was falling in love with food and started really realizing the connection and missing my mom's home-cooked food and thinking about the stuff my grandmother would make, and kind of it almost coming full circle with a part of my life almost fading out.
Interesting.
The sports and whatnot, and food becoming more of a deal where, you know, I was relating it with comfort and good times and my friends, and it was making sense, and why do people cook and what these flavors kind of evoke and how they bring it back to some sort of like nostalgic period or whatever. And I moved back to Austin to play with the Austin Lightning one more time. I had made a connection in Greece, but there was nothing set for sure. I had a contact to go get a tryout for a team. Okay. That was it. There was nothing that would, you know, so I had to make my own way there. I had to contact these people. I had to go and try and figure it out. So I was playing here in Austin. I moved back and I was playing. I ended up getting injured again. I ripped my knee and ended up having full reconstructive surgery eventually afterwards. But I met my wife that summer, and I had gotten my job. I had a few jobs I was doing in the restaurant industry there. And ended up working back at Ranch 616 eventually. After about two or three other jobs at Hilton and this place called Hog Island Deli and whatever, I ended up back at Ranch 616. And there is where I really kind of just took everything by the reins and just started full in the culinary world.
Were trailers starting to pop up?
Nah, not really. Maybe a couple here and there. And I always had the idea of a food truck. And I remember talking about opening up. Okay, so to kind of back up a little bit, when I was 18, I still couldn't. I couldn't find food. I was not impressed with, I guess in quotations, Tex-Mex food. You know, I couldn't get the same stuff that my aunt had at her restaurant. What I felt was in San Antonio, I couldn't get the same type of stuff. It was a different type of Mexican cuisine and fusion stuff going on. And I just like felt like there was like great things at restaurants, but overall, like the same amount of care going into like a cheap cut of meat wasn't put into like the more expensive cut of meat. Or the same amount of care into the rice wasn't the same. That care wasn't into the tortillas, mm-hmm. or vice versa. Like they might make a great dish or a few great dishes, but everything else was just around it. What, in my opinion, I feel like everything has to be equal
for sure,
because it all has to come together. And those were the ideas. I mean, when I looked at cheaper food or less expensive food or comfort food, I felt that the same type of care that people were putting into like these fine dining restaurants that I experienced in Miami, that should be across the board.
That's interesting. That's a lot of people don't feel that way, which mean a lot of restaurateurs don't feel that way. It's kind of for that casual or like fast casual or comfort food, they're not putting as much time.
Right. So I feel like it's still food, mm-hmm. and you're giving somebody an experience. So I would think that the same type of care needs to go into it, for sure. You know, and it's kind of like, well, if they don't feel that way about fast casual stuff, well, you know what? I go back and I think about my mom making arroz con pollo, and she's putting her love into that food.
Taste that love, yeah.
You can taste that love. So if it's on the most basic level for your family, why not be able to share that even if you're trying to just create food for the people?
Mm-hmm.
Think about fine dining food. It's elevated, and it's for people that want to spend more money and have an education on food, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, not everyone can experience that. And that
was not fair, really.
Right. So something for me, like I got to experience that when I got to college. I made friends that came from more affluent families and stuff at St. Edward's. And I started going out and talking to different people and what they've experienced. And then they're moving to Miami. And I'm just like, you know, there's no reason why someone there's no reason why like a fast casual or casual restaurant or a taco stand can't put the same amount of love into someone that's being paid 50 grand a year to, true, you know, serve some Dover sole with capers and beurre blanc sauce and have it filleted tableside, you know?
Hands down. No, hands down. That's so smart.
And so, you know, when I come to Ranch 616, my cousin was a chef and partner there, and they were doing some really cool stuff back, you know, when they were both him and Kevin Williamson. They were the chef owners, and, you know, they were taking kind of the idea of Texas food and adding in techniques that they had learned that were through French cooking, like demi-glace over a ribeye steak with blue cheese crumbles, adding in enchiladas, taking, you know, sweet Tasmanian crab, putting it on tenderloin with au gratin potatoes, a grilled quail with poblano mashed potatoes. Like, the, like that little Texas-type fusion, nice culinary techniques was there. And I learned a lot at that restaurant because of that. But the, you know, I got to a point to where I was maxed out. Like there was nowhere else for me to go at that restaurant. I had learned everything. I had been able to work the kitchen in charge of caterings and events, front of the house. I had done everything there. And I guess when I was about 26 years old, so I had been with my wife for about, we had been together for about a year or so. And I started telling her that, like, this is what I think this is what I want to do one day. And so her advice, she tells me, she goes, well, why don't you write it down?
That's smart.
Write it down. Make a plan. And I had talked about it. And, it always goes back to when I was 18. And I talked so much crap. Like, you can't get tacos like you can here, right? So, like, the first idea was a taco shop serving breakfast tacos. That was it. And it was idea of like something called a taco junkie or the taco dealer. Mm. And so as I'm involved with Ranch 616 and I see these steaks and like the ideas continue to evolve. And I made a goal. I wrote it down on a piece of paper. So by the time I was 30 years old, I would be on my way to opening up my own space. Mm. And then so you start seeing food trucks around this time a little bit more. About, well, I was, you know, I guess 2005, 2006, you start seeing pop up a little bit more in Austin. You know, to me, those things were always taco trucks, right? In San Antonio, they were taco trucks. They weren't food trucks. And then I remember when I had, I guess, been back in town for a little bit, Torchy's had opened or so, and they were right on that corner of Little Woodrow's. It was the idea that I had where I wanted to put a truck. I just didn't know how, to go about doing it at 19, 20 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, through this whole time, I'm practicing cooking, different techniques of cooking. I'm practicing. I'm working in the restaurants. I work the kitchen at Ranch sometimes. And I started barbecuing more because my dad at the time had like really perfected his brisket. So from eating it at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old to where it was just kind of like, oh, this is great. This is good. And my dad just cooking it. And sometimes it comes out great. Sometimes it came out okay. Where he had really, you know, put in time and smoking it, and he had figured out little things where he would pull it and put it in a Lexan.
Oh, interesting.
And then put it in the oven and let it rest. So without him knowing what he was really doing, he had created these techniques to where he was letting the brisket rest, and it was kind of like it was in a warmer or a hot box or something, right? So he was creating his own little methods with what he had at home, and we were getting, he was creating this really awesome brisket. And so when I was, you know, 26 years old, whatever, I'm making ribs and chicken and sausage on the regular, and I'm practicing my briskets, you know. I'm practicing smoking steaks and then reverse searing them. I'm doing all these stuff that I don't even know the proper terms. Doing all this stuff, and most of it was because I wanted to be – my dad and I created, like, this competition between each other, and I was trying to get better at him and making – I was trying to be a better, you know, barbecuer than him. You
trying
know?
To beat him, yeah.
I was trying to beat him. And we would, you know, have these times at my house where I'd take stuff back and, you know, try this. So as I'm trying to develop the idea for the restaurant or write down ideas, I don't know what's about barbecue. I don't know what's about Tex-Mex yet. I don't know what I want. The first initial idea was something way fancier than what we have now. But I remember writing an idea for Valentina's before I called it Valentina's, and I had stuff like smoked brisket that was sliced on top of beef fajita enchiladas. I had the idea of serving fideo with smoked tenderloin on top instead of ground beef, you know? And so I had this idea of like pinto and red kidney beans together with the fideo and then sliced tenderloin with avocado on top.
Which was spectacular.
It was these ideas for these things to happen that was more of like an elevated Tex-Mex with some barbecue influence.
And a little higher end.
A little higher end, but I wanted to create dishes that were going to be affordable, and the love was going to this food, and people weren't paying prices that were so high with the attention to detail on food and this home cooked vibe, you know? So that was an idea at first, but I remember going home one day and my dad had smoked brisket, a couple quarter chickens, had maybe some ribs or something. He had barbecued, and my mom had rice, beans, some avocado slices with just some salt on it. And she would slice it up and put salt and then just smash it with a fork, you know? And then some salsa. So we're sitting down eating, and I make myself a brisket taco, a little bit of avocado, a little bit of salsa. And I look at my dad, and I'm just like, you know what? Tex-Mex barbecue, man. That's it. That's it.
That was a moment.
He's like, what? And I was like, man, I go, you eat at these restaurants, and I feel like it's like, you know, very commercialized or whatever. But what's the true essence of what we're doing here? I was like, you know, I had taken some classes too. There was a professor, his name was Raul Salinas. He was an adjunct professor at St. Edward's University. He was very Chicano and into the Native American movement, American Indian movement. He was part of AIM, and you know, there was a few classes I took with him about literature and performance and the difference between a Mexican, a Hispanic, a Mexican-American, a Chicano, right?
Okay. Like,
what are the differences between these people when they're labeled that way? Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, this whole idea of me thinking when it dawns on me and I just think Tex-Mex barbecue, my dad's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, what have I experienced in Texas? You know, playing soccer with the Austin Lightning allowed me to spend time in Del Rio, Laredo, El Paso, and these cities that were similar to like San Antonio, you know? And everywhere you go, it's the same kind of feeling. It's like the third or fourth or fifth generation, second, third, fourth generation Mexican Americans that are having influences of like Texas and America with the Mexican influence, and it's all about the barbecue in the backyard. Mm-hmm. It's all about homemade tortillas and fresh salsas and then the Mexican influences. That's what they're doing on the daily. So to me, I was like, this is true representation of Tejano cooking.
For sure.
And I go, and you can't get this anywhere. You cannot go to a barbecue restaurant and get a proper brisket taco that tastes like this. Mm-mm. People are putting their leftovers or they're chopped and putting it in a store-bought tortilla and calling it a day. And, you know, and like there was nowhere around. I was like, there's nowhere really trying to take the essence of barbecue and put in these Mexican flavors and having, in my opinion, was what Mexican Americans were doing across the board in Texas, everywhere in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. And it's a true expression of you, too.
Yeah. So I wanted to represent for what I felt was like this culture that has been developed over the years that's not really. Maybe, and my dad was like, are you sure people are going to want that? I mean, that's what we make for ourselves at home, you know? I was like, yeah, this stuff's great. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? If they don't, then they don't. They're missing out. But I'm going to give it a shot. This is what I'm going to roll with. So as soon as that happened, you know, I'm in my head. I'm like, all right, well, there's, I guess, the time where people are talking more about Texas barbecue, where it's the social media is more involved.
It's starting to slowly, yeah.
Yeah, and there's more outlets, right? There's more avenues where people can receive and put out information. Mm-hmm. My idea is, if I'm gonna make Tex-Mex barbecue, then that means my Tex-Mex or my Mexican food has to be, in my opinion, some of the best and quality enough to stand up to the best restaurants and the abuelitas in San Antonio. Okay? So if I make some chato beans, it has to taste like my grandmother's, like my friend's grandmother's, like this restaurant I know, and this restaurant has to be really as good as that. The tortillas, everything have to be as good as that. If I'm going to cook barbecue, then let me find out who the best people are. And our barbecue has to stand up to the best in Texas.
Wow. That's a tall order.
So we go to, you know, go to Taylor and Lockhart and whatnot. And I didn't, at that time, I didn't know who Aaron Franklin was, and he had been open for, I guess, a couple of years as in a trailer, you know.
It was then, yeah.
It was then. I didn't know. The first time I ever experienced his barbecue was at the location he has now.
Okay.
And it was roughly about the time we were about to open, and my son was in school. I remember I decided to go by there and I grabbed some brisket and I brought it back and I told my son, I was like, well, this guy's the best around. What do you think? You know? And my son looks at me and is like, it's pretty good. His little honest
That's
opinion.
hilarious.
It's pretty good. You know, so I was like, well, then I go, we have to be pretty good too.
So how did you get yourself to like for people that would want to know, even for themselves, like how did you get to jump to the point of getting the trailer and stuff and doing that, like, and the location too?
Well, okay, so I had spent a lot of time at Ranch 616, I guess, right? I had been running the restaurant for almost 8 years. This is after I've come back from Miami. So I'm actually turning 32 when I opened up Valentina's. This is in 2013. Yeah, I was 32 years old. So there's like this following, and I've created connections since I was 19 years old in
Without a doubt,
Austin.
I was going to say that for sure.
You know, there's a long time there. The people that I was serving when I was 19, 20, 21, 22, they now have careers and they're now like vice president at Horizon Bank. They're at this real estate company, you know? They're people and they're coming into Ranch 616 still. So now they're coming in with their parents. Now they're bringing in their wives and
Their
they're starting
kids,
their
yeah.
families and their careers. And so I had really, you know, I kind of had this little reputation as the GM at Ranch, and I'm in that corner and that little block over there. I've run my mouth about how, you know, maybe not to everybody, but I ran my mouth on how no one can make tacos here. I had run it a little bit, but so I had kind of built, it was like this built-in clientele and a good amount of people and connections I had made. So when I decide to open up and do this thing, and after I have it all written down, a little bit of a plan, I had a friend of mine at the time who was a partner with us for about a year, who had known the same kind of circle of people from that town like I had. And we went in together. We had done a few catering jobs on the side. I had stacked a little bit of money from Ranch 616, and I put my own money in to buy the trailer, and we had another person come in. And so we ended up getting a line of credit from Horizon Bank. And then we purchased the trailer and equipment with stuff we just hustled, you know? So a good year, we buy the trailer and we just go for it. The first smoker we had was my father's from his backyard. And we put that inside the trailer. And then I also had another barbecue pit that I had bought that was a propane tank, but it was like a 200 gallon or something. And we had a smokestack on it too. We could cook maybe up to 10 briskets max.
And how did you find your location?
So I was at Ranch 616, and Star Bar had a food truck there that they were a little bit kind of like they were doing a fine job, but I had caught word that these guys were getting more popular, so they were trying, they wouldn't show up all the time. And I got word that, you know, the owners of Star Bar, and at this point, Kevin Williamson is a partner in Rattle Inn and Star Bar too, but they weren't there on the regular. And so I caught word that they were going to be kind of asked to leave and they're going to try and find a replacement. So I go to my boss and the partners, and I'm like, look, I have this idea for a food truck. I know that you want someone there to serve the bar. I guarantee if you give me 3 months, I will be open 7 days a week, serving at night, making sure people stick around and have a good time. And I will provide the best food I can. And I go, you guys have seen me work on this block for 8 years. It's time for me to try my own thing. All I want is the support. It's all I ask is y'all support. And I will do my best to do the best food I can here. So that's basically the story. And I ended up getting that little back lot right there behind the Star Bar on West 6th Street in Nueces. And I remember the first day we opened up, we probably had 100 people waiting for us.
Really? What were you just doing evenings at that time?
I was just doing evenings. I did Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, something like that.
Okay.
It was Thursday through Sunday, opening up at 5 o'clock.
And what was your menu then?
It was basically just our normal menu now, what we
Okay.
have. It was four tacos. It was brisket, the smoked carnitas, chicken, and beef fajita.
Okay.
Then we had four sandwiches, and we did offer by the pound, but only pork, brisket, and chicken.
Okay.
I only made ribs as a special, and I would make a few racks at a time. And I made sausage, but for sausage wraps only. So it was very, like, even though I was serving by the pound, our first 6 months or so was a lot of tacos, you know? And I didn't want to be known for, even though I guess I kind of did, I wanted to be able to show people like a different kind of way of eating barbecue, but I started getting annoyed that we were known as like the taco truck that had barbecue tacos. I thought that our barbecue was good enough to stand up to everybody else's. So we kind of put a little bit more, as we grew, we put a little bit more emphasis on, I guess, barbecue type plates with the Mexican influence, or showing people that our brisket and pork was good enough. But it did take a little bit of time. It wasn't like the brisket we were making then in the first year compared to what we do now is, in my opinion, is night and day.
Well, it takes a lot of time to learn, and you're so many
And
different techniques and
I had been practicing brisket for a good 5, 6 years at the by the time we opened. It had been a good 5, 6 years that I was trying to hone it into myself. But it's a different thing cooking two or three briskets than trying to cook eight. And it's a different thing trying to cook eight at one time when you're trying to cook eight briskets and 4 or 6 pork butts and 12 whole chickens and trying to maneuver on this. And then it's a different thing when you're trying to cook 42 briskets at one time. You know?
That's huge. And also do scratch made tortillas and
Right. So, I mean, it's the same, but it's different, right? Here's the other thing is like, how are you going to get the quality of all 40 of them, all 40 to be the same, or 60 briskets, whatever you're doing, to be the same? How are you going to do that? Well, the one thing that's constant is the fire. And, as we got better, then we got better equipment. I got better barbecue pits. Seeing what is out there in the propane tank ones, and then we kind of developed our own and what works for us and our designs, I guess fairly unique compared to everybody else's. It's similar.
You designed it, right, yourself?
I designed the pits, but I didn't weld them. I'm not a welder, so I have someone that actually physically built them for me. But they're my designs based off initial design that this welder I knew started. So I changed them. I changed designs. After the first one he had made us, I started changing the design and asking him to make a few different changes, and we developed what we have now.
How and so and so that you said that people there were 100 people lining up that first week or the first
That first,
was
it
that
was,
constant still, or did it kind of die down and change?
well, it was interesting because, like, we always kind of had we always had very nice momentum. We opened up with a bang. All my friends and family and people around that West Austin area that knew I used to run Ranch 616, and I opened up my barbecue deal. I feel like they were all excited and interested to see if I was going to come with what I was talking about. You know,
Because you've been talking about it for a while.
I've been talking about it, and we opened up really nice. And then, really, 2 weeks after we opened up, it was South by Southwest.
That could be huge.
So we got murdered. I was hand rolling all the tortillas at the time, and slicing brisket, and running out and checking fires, and shutting down and cleaning all that good stuff. And it was me, my brother, my wife, and two friends. My sister, my mom come up with help on the weekends when they could, you know. So I kind of like we bit off a little bit more than what we could chew, right off the bat. But we happened. And then we started implementing breakfast on the weekends, little by little. It was just breakfast on the weekends, and then ribs on every Wednesday, and then slowly adding another day. And it took a good 6 months till we were open every day and serving lunch, and lunches started picking up. And then that was a good start from at that part of town. South by opening up right before South by Southwest, I think really helped us out a lot because we got a lot, there was a lot of social media exposure during that time and a lot of talking. And then we went right into the Trucklandia, is what it's called now. But before it was like Truck by Truck West, is what they started. And there's just like different things going on. And I think with Aaron Franklin and the movement that he kind of helped push with the barbecue in Austin, we came in right on this cusp and right at this time where people were starting to be interested in the food trucks, kind of were bouncing around everywhere. And a good year goes by to where we're getting some good recognition and business is staying pretty constant. The built-in clientele there, we operated more like a restaurant, not a food truck. We were partnered with Star Bar back there, and so our guys would have to go in and help clear plates from people, deliver the food. We would take glasses off the table, maybe bring them a beer as well. So we
Ah,
were,
so it's a restaurant, yeah.
yeah, we're operating with full service, and that's where I came from. And the idea was to always serve people, not like they were eating at a food truck, but like they were eating at a nice establishment.
With like an outdoor space, essentially, yeah.
Customer service was key. Our food had to look good. We had to have presentation. We had to just take all those elements I talked about before. And then our slogan was Hecho con amor, right? Made with love. I've always said from the very beginning that everyone that we're going to serve, that has to be, I told my staff and my brother and my wife, that's someone special in our life. We're serving our grandmother, our cousins, our uncles, our dad, our mom. Everyone that comes up there, that's who they are. That's how we're cooking.
That's great. That's a great philosophy.
Be that way. We make mistakes here and there. We have some employees that always don't buy full into our philosophy, and they weed themselves
Always.
out. And we're open 7 days a week now.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, how that's tough. So.
We serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We try not to sell out early. We try and, keep cooking so we have barbecue to serve into the evening time. But when we do run out, we have other stuff that we've learned that are maybe we're cooking our pork ribeye that takes 4 hours to do instead of 16 hours, and we can have stuff ready for the evening time. And
That's great.
we try and keep cooking to operate so we can have breakfast, lunch, and dinner,
What can people expect for breakfast if they come in?
Well, we add a lot of our you can get barbecue at breakfast, okay? So you can get ribs, sausage, brisket, beef ribs, pork butt, all by the pound at breakfast. We also have a breakfast taco menu. One of our most popular ones is the Real Deal Holyfield, and that's based off a Huevos Rancheros plate, but we add brisket. So it's homemade flour tortilla with refried beans, potatoes, bacon, fried egg with their red salsa, and then a slice of brisket on top. So you can
That's
get
wait.
plain old breakfast taco, potato and egg, or fried egg, but then you can add our skirt steak, our fajita, or brisket, sausage, homemade chorizo. We can add all that stuff to all the breakfast tacos. And we stop serving at 11 a.m. sharp, but that is because we're still working in a small space. And if I try to continue to cook breakfast, then we would never switch over completely. Then it messes with lunch. And
No, that's you need the transition, yeah.
On the weekends, every Sunday, we do our smoked barbacoa. So it's 100%, and everything we try and do is we utilize the barbecue pits 100% as much as possible.
What was it like when you first got like someone like Daniel Vaughn or a barbecue person that came in to write something about you? What was that response and what was the reaction from people and how did you feel?
I felt okay. So we opened up, right? And there's some things I don't pay attention to too much. I try not to pay attention to a lot of media stuff. I try and when I opened up, I wanted to really focus on just what I wanted to do. So I didn't like read any articles. Once I did my little bit of research on some of the people that were making barbecue and then some of the Mexican restaurants I was looking at, I just focused in on my own. And but I remember that the Texas Monthly Top 50 had come out like 2 months after we opened. And I was like, we're going to be in that. Like, that's a goal. And in 4 years, my goal is to make it in that. Okay. I don't really worry too much about lists. I try not to. It's nice when you get mentioned, of course. So that definitely helps everything. My most important goal is to be able to have everyone love our food. So
First and foremost, yeah.
If that was a writer or if that was another restaurateur, another chef, it's just important for, you know, John from down the street who I don't know, for him to love the food because he's going to go tell 20 people or 15
exactly.
people
yeah.
he likes it.
Or as come much, back again and again. Yeah.
Right, as much as it is for a top chef. But when you're cooking for someone who knows what they're doing and you know they know what they're doing with food, it is there's a different level of respect and there's something that you do want to make sure they're impressed with it because mm-hmm. their opinion matters just a little bit more.
That's like a peer kind of, yeah.
Right, but you want to make sure that that food that you're making for them is just good as a Joe and Andrew and Maria and everyone who's just down the street too.
For sure.
That you know who they have to it has to be equal, right? But the first time, I think I remember Daniel Vaughn coming by and him trying our brisket taco and our smoked carnitas taco, and he had some nice things to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember him popping by one time. We weren't open yet, and then he came back later. And my wife's the one who really kind of keeps in touch and knows who everybody is. And she would be like, that's so-and-so, that's so-and-so. All right, cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's good.
All right.
But then what was it like then to find out when you made the list?
Well, before that, everyone knows Aaron Franklin at this time now, you know. And then remember one day he comes by our restaurant or by Valentina's and they're, oh, Aaron Franklin's there. Aaron Franklin. I was like, well, cool. Make sure you make the food good just like we do for everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, let's go, right? And let's get his food out, whatever. But then in my head, I'm like, oh, man, I hope he likes it, you know. So anyway, he comes out and we order some food. We serve him, sit down. Well, hey, how's it going? And George says, oh, man, I'm glad. I remember him saying, I'm glad it's as good as everybody else says it was. You know, because I'm glad it's as good as everybody says it is. So that was one of the things I was like, awesome, man. Then he, like, you know, we became friends after that. He came back with a few guys to show him the place and he asked, you know, he wanted some tortillas one day, so we made him some tortillas.
Oh, that's great.
And we developed a nice, you know, business friendship there, and it's been great. And he supports us, and, you know, it's nice to know that he genuinely feels, you know, what he says is what he's a very genuine person, so what he says, he means it, you know?
For sure.
And for someone like him to have our back and support us, that was huge. And then other people start rolling in. And then, you know, Texas Monthly and Daniel Vaughn, where I had written top 25 joints, new or improved barbecue joints. And this is basically people that would be considered that could be on the lookout to maybe making the 50. And so we just, you know, we hear that stuff. I'm like, all right, well, we got to be better. We got to get better. Every time we got to get better. You know, how's this coming out? Well, this doesn't look right. This isn't right. How can we get better? It's always never about, okay, well, you know, they say we're good, so we're good.
Yeah, and the stay. Yeah, yeah.
It's like the more press that we got, the more drive it gave me to try and make sure that we continue to improve every day. And I don't claim to be the best. I don't claim to know everything that there is, but I do know that I put 100% of my heart and soul into what I do. And I know that we're going to make mistakes. And I know I will make mistakes, but I try and learn from them as much as I can. And I try and be respectful to everybody else. And I try and worry about what I want to do and what I'm trying to create for my family. And I feel, you know, by me trying to learn as much as I can every day and continue to take from others and give back and put heart and soul into it, if we do it for the right reasons, and I think that's – you know, the measure of our success, and that's what makes us who we are.
And you're putting out food that you're proud of. That's important. I think to some people, it seems like it's not as important. It's just important just to get food out. It doesn't matter. But it seems like you take a lot of pride in what you do, and it shows. And also, I'm sure it's a good feeling knowing that you're working as hard as you are, putting as much time and effort into it, and it's coming out the way that you want it to come out.
Right. And, you know, and I have, like, you know, there's a lot of other ideas I have for food that, you know, other concepts in restaurants. And so, like, you know, I was talking to my wife, like, if we get this recognition and how am I able to, what's the true test here? Right. like you get to reach to a point like, well, I know I can make good food. I have confidence in myself that I can make really good food or barbecue and Mexican food. But like, what's the real challenge? The real challenge is, you know, you look at top chefs and restaurateurs and people who can create stuff and teach, and then they can get a crew to put out what they want and what the vision that they have and get other people to do it, right? So that's about 2 to 3 years in the business when I was, you know, man, we were working 18 hours a day every day. Sure. 2 or 3 years into the business, I'm like, well, like it's time. Now I had to have a true measure of what we can do by creating a team that can put out what I have in my head and my heart every day. And how do we teach people to constantly recreate the stuff and to care?
And to feel comfortable that when you are away, that it's just, it's they're putting out the same product.
Exactly. Because it's never about me not wanting to be there anymore. I love what I do. But I always feel just like in life, it's always about growth. And I don't want to have 5 Valentinas. You know, I want to have a nice destination spot where everyone that works there loves to work there. We put out good food, the best food that we can. But it's still about growth. And for me as a boss and a chef or pit master, there's going to be times in my life where it's time to move on to something else, right? Do something different or become a leader and teach the ones that have been underneath me and teach them to be in the position I was, right? And that can't happen if I just...
If you're there all the time.
There all the time, but, you know, I try to spend as much time there as I can. I still go in and I do stuff every day now. I work every day there. Still work 7 days a week there.
Yeah, you're not... But you're just not there 18 hours a day.
I may not be there 18 hours a day.
No, but that's important for life balance, too.
Because it's time for us to, you know, we've had some issues right now with the getting permits and continuing to build, but nothing that's gonna make or break the business. It's just time, just the different procedures and time that we have to, you know, accept. And, you know, God willing, we're gonna have this thing open soon, but it's just time. So a lot of my effort right now has gone to teaching and managing, and then the other end of the business that's fairly new to me, which is the growth and development and building.
And is that going to be nearby?
It's going to be exactly at the location we're at right
now. Okay, okay.
Wow. Yeah, there's that property that we're on is 1.5 acres, and we're going to continue to serve while we remodel and do construction on the building that's on site.
Oh, wow, very cool. How far off does it look?
We'll have some answers maybe in about 6 weeks as far as when construction might be able to start for real, maybe. It's just a matter of paperwork and separating a plot of land and getting a site plan approved. It's kind of all in the works right now.
Wow, that's exciting. That's good. It's got to be stressful, but exciting too.
And it was a long time to get to where we are now because we had to reapply for zoning, and that took about 10 months, and then we had to just work some stuff out. But things are moving forward, and there's a little bit of light now, which gives me makes me feel a lot better. But, you know, I don't need to, we don't need to move fast. You know, I think we're, the pace that we're moving at is good for us. It's good for me. Things happen for a reason.
Yes, for sure.
If there's holdups, then maybe I wasn't ready at that moment, you know?
Yeah. That's how it is in life. Yeah, for sure.
Just get us to the next place. But I'm excited about building out Valentina's, and Valentina's has allowed me to be able to experiment and do other stuff. I like to be creative, and I don't ever want to take away from the essence of like Texas barbecue or the influence that the Mexican influence has there. But I do like to play with different specials and whatnot, but I don't want to ever get too crazy. But some of the techniques that we do, hopefully maybe in the near future, you guys will see some stuff that was an idea at Valentina's make its way into an actual, its own life form somewhere else. Wow.
That is really, really awesome. Oh, so excited.
It would be something maybe I could talk about, like what we do on Thursdays with the smoked burgers. That could take on a life of its own.
Nice. Oh, that is so cool. That is so
cool.
So this fall you could be having something that's on the horizon. It's close.
Well, yeah, this fall we might be able to moving forward with building, hopefully, and and then the ideas for these other things. It's like, not I'm not going to do anything else until the building's complete.
Mm-hmm. But that'll all be within that same location.
Yeah. When Valentina's building is complete, that's where, you know, I'm going to put a good 4 to 6 months where I will be working 10, 12-hour shifts again. Mm-hmm. Right now, some days I work 12 hours, some days I work 3.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of depends. But when the restaurant's built, I will probably put in 6 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day for a good 4 to 6 months probably. Just
that's what it'll take, yeah, for sure.
Because it's going to kind of, you know, we're gonna new space, and we're going to need to make sure everything's on point.
Yeah, and ramp up staff-wise and, like, deal with them.
But during that time, and, you know, after a good little time of the restaurant being built, then I think maybe we'll be ready to kind of move on with some other ideas that we might have. So,
how exciting. That's so cool. And thank you so much for taking the time. Your story was remarkable, and a lot of people, I think, will find that your story touches them in the same way, like, because that's their life and that's their heritage and that's their, and I think a lot of people too find that a lot of restaurants just phone it in. And
I feel sometimes it gets lost to where it becomes about, you know, having to pay your bills and make money.
True. Yeah. Yeah. Cut corners just because, you know, you want to keep the restaurant open somehow.
Right. And it's, you know, it's hard to be able to, like, find something to be passionate about and care about that first before money, because we live in a society and a life where that's what
keeps everything moving, and you can't, yeah, you have bills. Bills aren't going to go away.
Right. But I think that, you know, there's a different way, like a certain way to look at it, right? Like, yeah, money and bills and stuff. We need to make money. The idea to open up a business is to make money.
Yes.
Right. But you can't do it for the sole purpose of seeing that green.
Without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. You have to have the love for it first. And if you, in my opinion, if you're doing things for the right reason and putting the heart and soul to it, then the success and the money will come.
I agree.
But it has to be the love for it first, and you have to treat it and respect that first. You have to respect the job, mm-hmm. respect the craft, respect the people you're cooking for.
And for any kind of longevity, for sure, too.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great restaurants and people that do exactly what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of people, I'm not the only one putting my heart and soul into.
No. But it's unique to you, and it also I think it's important that people hear that, because then it's on their mind to go visit your restaurant, they know where you come from if they get a chance to watch this or hear this or.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Miguel, and thank Modesty again, and I appreciate you taking the time and sharing your story, and I can't wait to visit again, and I actually want to visit tomorrow, so I'll be out there September, October, and I'll come
okay.
with you.
Okay. That sounds good.
Excellent. Have a great week. Good luck with everything. Good luck with all the new stuff.
Okay. Sounds good.
Awesome. Have a great day.
You too.